A couple weeks ago, I made a comment that we don't understand God at all, hardly. And the way we think He works is not at all the way He works. And my desire is to know and understand Him better. I really do have that desire. And my prayer is that the Lord would teach us more about Himself. And I'd gotten up to a point where we're talking about this proof of the fruit of the Spirit. And I brought this up to the point where when I got saved, I experienced the fruit of the Spirit, and I experienced it in abundance. Some people, maybe they get saved and they don't get a real big load, but I did. And I rode on that for years. They kept telling me, oh, you'll get over it. A couple years later, you'll get over it. It took a while, and I finally got over it. But boy, they had to work on me. It was about like Job. You know, Job's out there, oh, he slay me, yet will I trust him. Well, you'll get over that, Job. We'll see to it. That's exactly what happened to the poor guy. And when you get saved and you got all this joy and peace and love, and when they start telling somebody you're going to get over it, oh, that's real encouraging. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't know why they tell them that. I guess maybe it's because, well, we don't want you to be let down too hard when you finally get over this. Why do we get over it? There's a good question. Why do we get over it? We get over it because things begin to change and we lose the proof that we are in the acceptable will of God. And back over in Jeremiah, we read that thing. It says, you know, let him that glory in this, that he knoweth and understandeth me. Well, if we're going to glory in anything, that'd be a great thing to glory in. The problem is we don't know him too well. And then he says over there, Ephesians 5, and this is really critical. It says, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable to the Lord. My proof of my salvation was several fold, but one of them was the simple fruit of the Spirit. And that's how you know somebody really got saved, because all of a sudden they start liking things they didn't like before, and they experience some things. Now, there's fact, faith, and feeling. And there's a lot of this feel-good religion going on with contemporary music that's just working yourself into a frenzy and saying, well, ain't this great? Ain't that wonderful? Ain't that fantastic? And everybody starts agreeing, and then they all just get excited about the thing. I mean, it's like a rock concert almost, you know? And they feel something. But that doesn't mean it's the fruit of the Spirit they're feeling. There's a big difference between just being happy and actually experiencing the fruit of the Spirit. But anyway, after about 5 years, I became a lot more like Martha, and I got frustrated. You say, where are we going with this? I'm going to show you something about how God works with people. And like I said a couple weeks ago, it's not like you think He works at all. We just kind of think everything's copacetic and things are going along and things are fine, and they're not. And we don't have any proof. Anyway, this fruit of the Spirit kept diminishing down to the point where the fruit of the Spirit was almost an exception to the rule. I said, well, didn't you have tears and stuff every once in a while when you sing a song or you get blessed by God? Yeah, but it became the exception. It wasn't the rule. It just got less and less and less, more and more duty and less pleasure, less and less fruit of the Spirit. But the love and the joy and the peace, pretty soon you're praying, I will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusteth in thee. Where's my peace, God? I'm miserable. Things are going wrong in my life. Everything's a wreck. Help! Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be as a Christian. The way it's supposed to be as a Christian, you're supposed to get some of this stuff. And your life is supposed to be a lot more calm and relaxed as a Christian than it was as a lost man. But anyway, 33 years, and finally God began to do something. What did He do? He worked on my wife. He put me in a position where I lost about everything. How come? Because I wasn't seeking the right things. That's why. I don't know what would have happened if things had been different and I'd have been doing what he said to do. Why did he wait 33 years? Mighty big chunk of my life, you know. Why wait 33 years, Lord? Wouldn't you think if you were doing the wrong thing, God would straighten you right out? You kind of think maybe he will, but he won't. He will leave you alone as long as you kind of leave him alone. Yeah. You say, well, I'm not leaving him alone. I'm coming to church. Yes, you are. You're leaving him alone. You're just going along doing what you think is right. And you just continue to do what you think's right. And you're not seeking him. You're not seeking to understand him better. And he just leave you alone. Well, he left me alone until he finally moved in and actually did something. Now, the glory of God has begun to change me. It's changed my focus. It's changed my direction. It's changed my desires. Emotionally, it's changed me tremendously. My wife and I listened to some Christian music on the way over here this morning, and it played through. It's a song called, "Do You Know How It Feels to Know You're Loved by the One Who Created the Stars Up Above?" And we both just get crying like babies. Where's that come from? You think that's my flesh? Do you know how it feels to know things are right when you lay your head on your pillow each night? I'm experiencing some of that fruit of the Spirit right this minute. You see Brother Joel up here crying? What do you think he's crying about? You think he's crying just because he sees himself as a worthless wretch that God finally saved? No, God says, those are the feelings of gratitude that I love. Those are the interests that I love to see in my children because the focus is back on me. So why don't we experience more of that? Because we've been misdirected. When I got a hold of some of this stuff and I started trying to talk to people about the glory of God and try to introduce them to some of these feelings, because it was just like when I got saved, I thought every Christian's going to want to know this. I thought every lost man wanted to know about Jesus Christ when I got saved. Ain't that stupid? And as a Christian, I thought everybody's going to want to know what it's like to understand some of these things. You start talking to them, next thing you know, they're just turning you off. How come? Well, God showed me some things about how come. You remember Moses? Moses said, "Show me your glory." You think God would have shown him anything if he hadn't asked? Think about that a minute. Moses asked the right question. When he asked the right question, God said, Now that's some interest I can respond to. He shows him his glory. Then what happens? Well, the rest of the people don't understand. They don't understand. They don't respond right. We want to understand his glory, but he's not going to do it unless we desire to. And we won't understand his glory unless he shows it to us. We're sinners. He's holy. What are you going to do about that? All of a sudden change yourself? You can't do that. It's a major distraction. What's that? His glory. And he comes down off that mountain with his face shining. They go, "Whoa, cover that thing up." What's wrong? Natural man's uncomfortable in the glory of God. You think that just means, oh, well, just a few, the lost people? No. Start talking to Christians about the glory of God and watch them.
Yep, that's right.
Wait, I want to keep thinking about me and what I'm doing. You're trying to draw my attention away from myself. And it's just uncomfortable. They don't think those words, but that's what's happening. Anyway, it's a major change, and we all resist change. We like things status quo. Things are a little more comfortable. It's against our nature. We're the natural man. The spiritual man enjoys it. The spiritual man is the one that actually experiences the fruit of the Spirit. You think this flesh experiences the fruit of the Spirit? This flesh enjoys the right kind of temperature, the right kind of food. It enjoys things that are just pure pleasure to the flesh. Matter of fact, he says the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye and the pride of life. That's probably what it responds to the most. It's against our ambitions. What do you mean? It's either his way or our way. And it's unnatural for us. If he shows us, we begin to change from glory to glory. Life becomes a little more about him. Those that are exposed or uncomfortable as they witness the change in others. You say, what are you talking about? Well, you get a hold of this glory of God, and all of a sudden the Christian friends you used to have, what happened to you, man? You're dropping your standards. Man, you went off the deep end somewhere. That's exactly what begins to happen. Why? Because this other stuff is the natural man. The desire of man, the natural man, he's about his works. He's about what he's doing. He's all about, look at what I'm doing for you, God. Anyway, they wanted to go away. They're repelled like magnets. And all of a sudden, you're polarized. You get near a Christian and start talking to him about this glory of God, and it's like, huh, what? And they can't wait for you to shut up. Get off that subject, change the subject, do something different. You think Brother Mark and I enjoy talking about the glory of God? How about with each other? How about my wife and I? and anybody else that gets in on some of this stuff and starts to experience the fruit of the Spirit, the minute you begin to talk about the glory of God, you begin to start responding to these things. The Holy Spirit comes along and says, now that's a conversation I can get involved in. I like that. And just to prove it to you, how about this feeling? That's great. You know, Baptists are all cold and rigid. Raise your hand and somebody says, oh, holiness, holiness. Pentecostal. What are we going to do? Be Pentabaptists around here, you know? I tell you the honest truth, there's been a couple times that I almost got up and ran up and down this aisle. Almost. You say, why didn't you? I don't know. Maybe because I wasn't trying to be an exhibitionist. But I can tell you this, if I ever do, you can bet it ain't in the flesh. You can bet on that. You'll think I went out of my mind and probably did, you know. Probably lost the part of me that's the natural man's mind. But anyway, God's got to turn this thing around. And God won't act until they desire to see it. Interesting, Moses comes down with his face shining. He desired to see the glory and the rest of them didn't want it. Isn't that weird? I mean, wouldn't you think that somebody would be a little bit more interested in their creator, the one that made them? After all the things that he had just done for the nation of Israel, don't you think there'd be a little bit more going on, a little more curiosity, a little bit more desire to know about that one that can do all of those things? That's amazing to me. Anyway, Christians are just about as lost about this matter of the glory of God as lost people are about salvation. They're totally without understanding until God steps in. Now, the things I'm going to tell you about right now, the things about God that he's beginning to make me understand, that I said, this doesn't make sense. One of the guys that I knew my whole life from a child up, this guy's name was Aaron Rodgers Nichols. He was born in Alabama and moved out to California. And that guy was a good man. He's one of the best men I ever knew. Pleasant, easy to get along with, nice guy. He'd come over to the house and visit occasionally, maybe even once a week. He was an insurance salesman. He'd like my mother and my grandmother. He was married and stuff, went to church. In fact, he was in church all his life. I got saved in 1973. When I got saved, it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I started witness to everybody, you know, and he was glad. He was happy about all that stuff. He was born in 1907. He died in 1986. And that man lived in church all of his life until he was 70 years old, lost and going to hell. Now, that's almost impossible for me to get a hold of. You say, oh, how do you know that? And I've heard of preachers that got saved after they've been preaching 20 years. You ever heard that? Doesn't that make you skeptical? It always did me. Every time I ever heard that, my immediate response was like the thing with Martha and Mary. I go, ah, that ain't right. That just ain't right. And God began to show me a little bit more, to understand him a little bit more. And I'll bet you there's some of those preachers that actually get saved after preaching for 20 years. You say, how in the world can that possibly be? Because God doesn't work like we think he works. He's not working in your life like you think he works. He's got a different motive for everything he does. He'll put that tree in the garden to kill him. His own creation that was made in his image. Hoping for the best, but he's got another agenda. And we just kind of think, well, this is the way God ought to be. But he's not that way. Bill Nichols got saved at 70 years old, you say. How do you know he got saved? Oh my, if you'd have known the man the way I knew him for all those years. And like I said, he was a pleasant man. He was a good man. My mother called up and said, Bill got saved. I said, what? What? Well, that's great. I said, I got to see this. Well, that was on a Sunday. The next day on Monday, he had to have knee surgery. They had to go in there and replace one of his knees. They replaced them both before he was done. And I went to see him in the hospital, and I walked in that room, and I knew instantly that man had been saved. And he had tears in his eyes. He was bubbling over. And I walked up, and he says, oh, can you imagine me, Bill Nichols, telling these nurses and doctors about Jesus? I said, yeah, man, that's exactly what happened to me. That guy got saved, and he'd been in church all of his life. and was on his way to hell, and God didn't bother him about it. When he says there's none that seeketh after God, he wasn't kidding. And God says, okay, buddy, you think you got all the answers? You think everything's fine with you? Okay, you're not going to question anything. You just go on ahead. You don't know him, but the next one I'm going to tell you about, you do know. As an example, my wife and I got married in 1970. I got saved May 20th, 73. She didn't get saved until December 9th, 73. You want to know what was going on in her life? Every Sunday morning, we'd be in church and the preacher would preach a message on salvation. Every Sunday night, he'd preach a message on service. On Wednesday night, he'd preach a message on doctrine, you know, Bible study and stuff like that. And we had all kinds of people in there within the first few months. When she was 11 to 12 years old, she went to a Methodist church. She went down front and prayed, and she took classes and got sprinkled. Can't get baptized there without knowing what you're doing, so we're going to teach you. You know what that is? Head knowledge. There ain't nothing going on between her and God. God just leave her alone. She felt something. She went and prayed by herself. And then she said, well, I'm going to try to do the right thing. So she gets sprinkled. She took those classes. She went a few weeks to a brother in church when she was about 13. She visited my mother's church with my stepdad, Bill Nichols. And nothing going on there. God leave her alone. God left me alone. She joined Central Baptist Church the same day I did. Went down there and talked to a personal worker. You been baptized? Yep. Okay. You saved? Yep. Guess so. How come? I did what they told me to do. I did what the Bible said to do. As far as she knew, that's exactly what was going on. Within 2 months, we were both singing in the choir, working on bus routes. She was working in the nursery. She had a second grade Sunday school class. She went on visitation every single Thursday, never missed. She led several people to the Lord. She was reading her Bible. She was memorizing scripture. She was working in junior church, praying every day. It was a personal witness to her parents, passed out tracts everywhere and put tracts in every payment envelope that went out. That woman was doing everything that she was supposed to do, everything that that preacher said to do, everything that the visitation people said to do. She was doing it all. And God left her alone. He didn't say, hey, what about you? By the way, that's exactly what happened to Bill Nichols. Sunday night, he went down front in that Nazarene church to pray for somebody else's salvation. And when he got on his knees at the altar to pray for somebody else like he had done many other times and started praying for him, God finally said, you better worry about Bill Nichols. And that was the first moment in his life that he realized he was not saved. Now that's God. That's not a preacher. That's not somebody kidding themselves. That guy believed 100% he was saved. The only thing Joan felt for those months was just a slight bit uncomfortable. That was it. There wasn't any conviction. There wasn't anything, I'm wasting my time. God left her alone. And on that particular Sunday, the 9th of December, 1970, she didn't ride the bus with me because Chris had been sick a little bit. He was 5 weeks old. So she drives the car, takes him. Preacher preaches a message that morning. Can a bride forget her wedding day? She said she came home and sat down on the couch and fed Chris, just holding it, and he went to sleep. Said God spoke to her. It's like he did Bill Nichols, spoke to it. Said, you know, if I were to come back right now, that baby'd go to heaven, you'd be left behind. I come walking in the door after that bus route. She goes, I need to talk to you. I said, what about? She said, I'm not sure I'm saved. I don't think I'm saved. I said, what do you want to do about it? I said, look, this thing's of God. God's going to do it, not me. I went to God only. I sought God's face. I just happened to ask the right questions finally. I don't know where that sense of curiosity comes from. You know, if God were to change everybody one day of the year and make them purple if they're saved. Do you realize there are people probably sitting right here today that would not turn purple? Bill Nichols would have looked down and gone, whoa, wait a minute. Joan would have gone, well, what about me? How are we going to know this stuff unless God does something? We've got a deceitful heart. Satan's a deceiver. How can we know without God's intervention, without God's proof, fruit of the Spirit? One way I know for sure is because God said, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable to God. Some of the absolute proof that God gives us are those things. Anyway, do you feel joy unspeakable? Do you really? I mean, when was the last time you got weeping like a baby over something God did for you?
That's right, brother.
When was the last time you got so emotional you couldn't speak anymore? How come? Well, you telling me I'm not saved? I ain't going to tell you nothing. But if anybody is going to tell you, it needs to be God. And he's going to leave you alone just like he did Bill Nichols for 70 years unless you begin to seek him. There's none that seeketh God. And the minute you begin to seek God, he'll begin to respond. The question is, if God turned everybody in here purple, we'd be okay. What if that happened one day of the year? What do you think would happen? What kind of bedlam do you think would take place in every church in the world? Just that one day of the year, you just wake up and say, well, I'm going to check my salvation today, God. God says, I'm going to turn purple if I'm saved. Well, how are we going to know? You see, I always thought that if somebody's lost, God's going to show them. He's going to make it crystal clear to them. I would have thought, as a Christian working as hard as I could, doing the best I could do for 33 years, that God would have showed me, hey, you're missing a major portion of your life. Instead of just letting me go and dig that hole deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is quit digging. How do you know it's a hole? How do you know if you're even digging? Well, there isn't any pleasure. There isn't any joy and love and peace and long-suffering and gentleness and goodness. I'm not talking about a feel-good religion here. I'm talking about God's proof of your salvation and proof that what you're doing is pleasing to your Maker. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, what's the difference? The difference is like that thing with Martha and Mary. The difference in Martha and Mary was, Martha was doing the best she could, and Mary was sitting there at Jesus' feet seeking. That's what she was doing. And that's the difference between the two. Which one do you think had more joy? Which one do you think was happier? It's because God was doing something in Mary's life. What did he tell Martha? Did he shake her and say, you're wrong. Mary's doing the right thing. You better sit down here. As you need to learn some things. Did he do any of that? You realize that when you leave Martha in the scriptures, the last thing you know about her, you know what she's still doing? She's still serving. Nothing changed. God says, I've given you enough for you to respond to. He said, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken from her. You know what Martha should have done right then? Said, well, I want to know more about that good part, God. I want to know. Don't leave me out, God. I want in on this deal. But no, I'm fine. Everything's okay with me. I'll turn purple. Maybe, maybe not. And we can either stay busy and keep on serving like Martha, or we can get busy seeking like Mary. We got those choices. We can continue in our self-confidence and hope God will stop us in our tracks if we're wrong. That's a mighty big hope. Considering some of the other things that I've seen God do in my life and the things he's beginning to open to my understanding to how he actually deals with his creation. I mean, I thought the whole time, well, God, you're a loving God. You know, you want everybody saved. You're not willing that any should perish, but that all come to repentance. What was the key word there? Come to repentance. It's what we do. We have to respond to the little bit of stuff that God gives us. If we don't respond to it, we're going to be left out of this deal. God's not at all like we think he is most of the time. He didn't stop Martha. He gave her enough to respond to. Has he given us enough to respond to? Once again, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. Let's close in prayer.